I'm Pam Puso, AM 1230, WFAS News.
Right now, WFAS News time 6:05. Time to get a check of the roads with Craig Schenkman with WFAS Westchester Traffic.
All right, Jim, thank you. 287 westbound side stays slow exit 7 to exit 3. Tap and Z disabled cleared from the southbound span. Not bad north and south on the Sprain Brook, quiet both ways in 95. Your update is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Organ transplants save lives, but only if you help. Donate life. Be an organ and tissue donor. Learn more at 866-99-DONATE or organdonor.gov. For a check now on your forecast, we check back in with meteorologist Tommy Ells.
Cloudy tonight with periods of rain and some patchy fog. Down around 60. Friday, scattered showers or drizzle. High 65 to 70. And Saturday, morning clouds, then partly sunny, 70. Tommy Ells from the WFAS Weather Center.
The following is a paid program. The opinions expressed are solely those of the sponsor and not necessarily those of WFAS or its advertisers.
Peace of mind with Lippman Cooks.
Hello, I'm Bernie Crooks. Welcome back to Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney, the weekly radio show heard right here on WFAS AM 1230, Thursday evenings from 6:05 to 6:35 p.m. This week, our guest is Michael Markoff of the law firm Danziger & Markoff. And Danziger & Markoff is a firm based in White Plains, and they specialize in real estate, pension, business, and tax law. And in particular, Michael specializes in estate planning. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Bernie. Thanks, Howard.
It's good to have you here. And, you know, Mike, one of the things that we hear all over the place these days, it seems, is that everyone should have an estate plan. Do you have to be rich to have an estate plan? What does that mean for the regular average Joe?
What estate planning is, or an estate plan really is, it consists of a series of documents, the most important of which is a will. And it doesn't matter if you have $1,000 or $100 million. Everyone needs a will for various reasons. The most important of which is if you have children, you need to name what's known as a guardian, someone to watch children if you weren't around, and to create certain kinds of trusts for children to protect them so that they don't get the money when they're 12 years old or 16 years old and buy a Ferrari. You need to hold it in a vehicle for them so that they don't get to the money too early.
What happens, you mentioned a guardian, one of the purposes of a will is for you to have a guardian for minor children. I assume minor we mean under 18?
Under 18, that's correct.
And what happens if you don't do this?
If you don't have a will, there's something called the law of intestacy that New York and every state has. And it's basically a capricious type of scheme where depending on whom you leave behind, that's who gets the money. In other words, if you have a spouse and children, you would think your spouse would get all the money, but that's not true. Your spouse would get a third of the money, and your children would get two-thirds.
I know my spouse thinks she'd get all the money.
Yeah, but that's not the reality. And that's not what anyone would want. No spouse or no family would ever want children to get anything immediately. Usually when the second parent dies, they would want that. So right away, without even worrying about guardians, that's a primary reason to consider having a will. You really want to override that scheme. You want to usually create, depending on the net worth, possibly certain kinds of trusts even for your spouse, just to shelter some money from estate tax, or in the alternative, have a trust for a spouse just to protect them from predators, you know, which could be a second spouse that comes along the way, or anyone who's looking to get money, possibly a child wants to get money from a widow, a trust will protect that money from any kind of outsider.
So just getting back to the guardian issue for a second, you mentioned it's important to have a guardian mentioned in the will for a minor child. What happens if either you don't have a will or your will neglects to nominate or a guardian for a minor child?
Then what happens is basically the two sides of the family will end up in court, which is the last thing anyone wants. No one wants to spend money on lawyers after someone dies on this, and it would get ugly. Really, both parents, both sets of parents, both sets of siblings will present themselves, and they'll say, I'm better than the next person being a guardian, watching the children, and tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars later, the judge will make a decision. Better you make the decision up front rather than leaving it to the families to fight it out.
Have you ever counseled clients in going through this process? I know personally I've spoken to my wife about it, and it's very complex, these issues.
It's usually the reason why I laugh when people come into the office and I ask how many children there are, and the youngest one's 18. It's because they've ducked the issue for 18 years. It creates enormous stress, but what I tell clients is, better you choose something than not to choose, because if at least you choose someone or some people, your children will be protected. If you don't and you avoid the issue, it will be a gigantic mess when you're both gone.
And if you, let's say you decide after you make the will and you decide a year or two later that the person you picked is really not a suitable person, are you locked in?
No, it's very simple to change a will. You can have as many wills as you want in your life. They're always revocable, always changeable. And we always joke in our office, every holiday season, whether it's Christmas, Hanukkah, Passover, Easter, we're good for a dozen calls or so of, we need to change the guardian because I was at my brother-in-law's house and his children are up till midnight and they're rotten children. I don't want my children in that house. Very simple, especially in the age of computers. It's really just a matter of printing out the will again, crossing the names off, and re-signing it. So it's a very simple process.
Okay, so that should help alleviate some of the apprehension people have about the finality of the decision. You can really change it if you don't like what you did.
That's right. Anything in a will is always changeable. There are certain trusts that I'm sure we'll discuss where you can't change them, but a will, every day of the week, if you had nothing better to do, you could change your will and change the guardians.
Now, you mentioned that if you don't have a will, then the state really makes one for you, and they decide who gets your property.
Correct.
If you do make a will, are you forced to leave any, like if you have a couple of kids and a spouse and a brother, I mean, are you forced to leave any particular person a set sum of money?
In New York, and I think it's true, again, of almost every state, there's something called a right of election, which says basically that you can't disinherit your spouse. No matter how you feel about your spouse, as long as you're married, you have to leave your spouse something. And in New York, you have to leave at least one-third of your estate outright. Once you get over that hurdle, that's the only person to whom you're obligated to leave money. You're not obligated to leave money, believe it or not, to children. You, if you so choose, which is a different issue, you could disinherit children. But you cannot disinherit a spouse.
Aren't they going to contest it?
The reality is they would contest it. If I left a third of my estate to my wife and two-thirds to charity, and I have children, it's very likely my children will contest and say I was being duped or I was being coerced or I was insane when I signed the will. Not to say that no one can challenge it, but you don't have to. If there's a feeling that you don't want to leave money to children.
Now, let's focus on, you mentioned one-third to the surviving spouse, and that's whether the husband dies first or the wife.
That's correct. It's one spouse leaving to another.
So it doesn't matter who was the working spouse.
That's correct. It does not matter who died, who has the money. If you have, let's say, a husband who's a surgeon and a wife who's a teacher, and she dies first, one-third of whatever she has will be left to the husband, whether it's $10,000 or $1 million, a third of that will go to the husband, in my example.
And it's one-third of the whole pie?
It's one-third of that person's, what's called the decedent's assets. Not the joint assets, just the decedent's assets.
What about life insurance?
Well, life insurance actually is an exempt asset from right of election. So if you wanted to be nefarious, what you would do is you would take all your money, buy life insurance, and leave it to the girlfriend, to the children, and you would not have any right of election issue.
All right, so it's obviously very complicated.
If you want to be tricky and you want to be deceptive, there are a couple of loopholes for it. Luckily, we don't run into too many of these people.
I'm Bernie Crooks, host of Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. We're talking with estate planning expert Michael Markoff of the White Plains law firm Danziger & Markoff, and we'll be right back after this short break.
Sooner or later, disability or illness strikes every family, and unfortunately, that's not the time to do the planning. The best time is in advance, before a crisis strikes.
Bernie Crooks from the law firm of Littman Crooks.
Susan, Vincent and Sheila's oldest daughter, had called us because one of her friend's parents recently had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and their financial affairs were best.
The caring professionals at Littman.
Apparently, we're experiencing technical difficulties. We'll get back to that in a second. This is Bernie Crooks. He'll give us more time to talk with Michael Markoff. And before the break there, we were talking about estate planning. And, you know, a lot of people ask me, Michael, when should I start doing estate planning? Should I wait till right before I'm going to die, wait till I'm 70 years old? When should someone start thinking about this?
Really, the first time you should consider preparing a will is when you have children. And some say when you get married, you can create a will, but the more acute problem is as soon as you have a child, that's when you really have to consider preparing a will. Again, naming guardians, creating trusts for children. If you've waited in life, rather you not wait till you're, God forbid, on your deathbed and do this, because then we might run into other issues of competency, whether you can sign a will. It's the old story of never put off till tomorrow what you can do today.
So it's not like God calls you up and says, hey, Mike, you got 2 weeks to go, you better go get your will done.
It happens a couple times a year, and it's probably the absolute worst thing to have to do is to go to a hospital and prepare a will for someone that you know the next time you get there will be the last time you'll see them. It's not a pleasant experience. I'd rather have much more time to make a plan, make some decisive choices, and do things that are tax efficient well before someone dies.
Now, I'm sure many of our listeners know attorneys. Maybe they know the attorney who did the house closing in 1958. Can they go to any kind of attorney to get this work done, or is this really a specialty these days?
The analogy I use with people who call me is that you're not going to go to the cardiologist when you break your arm. The law is incredibly specialized, and more specifically, the tax law is really a subspecialty. And as much as the regular lawyer can prepare a simple will, that's almost never what's necessary. You really need to go to someone who has a breadth and a depth of knowledge in the tax law and trust in the state's law to get a competent job for you. Again, it's almost another analogy is you get what you pay for in life. And if you want to spend $500 on a simple will, That might be a fine document, but I doubt that it's what's required for you or what will accomplish your needs.
Have you seen, we've seen clients come in from time to time with wills printed out on the internet. What's your opinion
right.
on those?
Those are scary, as well as wills you can go into Borders or a bookstore and buy, because they're written for the whole country. And every state has its own tax laws. The federal law obviously covers everybody, but every state has its own specialties and own things, special things you have to worry about. You can't buy a universal form or universal document off the shelf and think that'll take care of you. Everyone has specifics. Every will is like a snowflake. They're all different, and you're never going to find one form that takes care of you.
So it's true that maybe an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure here?
That's absolutely the case. It's well worth finding someone who's concentrates in this area, who knows a lot about it, and spending some money to get the job done right.
I'm Bernie Crooks, host of Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney, and we're going to take another shot at taking that short break.
Sooner or later, disability or illness strikes every family. And unfortunately, that's not the time to do the planning. The best time is in advance, before a crisis strikes.
Bernie Crooks from the law firm of Littman Crooks.
Susan, Vincent and Sheila's oldest daughter, had called us because one of her friend's parents recently had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and their financial affairs were a mess. They had not done any advance planning.
Susan didn't want that to happen to her parents. The caring professionals at Littman Crooks helped her design a comprehensive plan that provided for long-term care while protecting her parents' hard-earned assets.
Susan and her siblings now have the peace of mind of knowing that their parents can go on with the rest of their lives without having to worry about what would happen if one of them became sick or disabled.
Your parents had big plans for you. Make sure you have one for them. Call the law offices of Littman Crooks in White Plains and Manhattan.
Peace of mind with Littman Crooks.
Call 914-684-2100.
Welcome back to Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. I'm Bernie Crooks, founding partner of the law firm Littman Crooks, with offices in White Plains and New York City. And our guest this evening is Michael Markoff of Danziger & Markoff. And we're talking about estate planning. You know, Michael, many times people say to us, you know, estate planning, this is not really something I want to do. You know, I think I want to go buy a new car today, maybe get some new wallpaper. You know, important stuff. But how do you get people to really take stock in this and really focus on it?
I think very simply, once I sit down with someone and go through a balance sheet and explain the tax law and explain how it affects them, that will get their attention. The way that the federal tax law works is the first $2 million of assets will pass free from estate tax. And then once you're above that, you're very quickly reaching a 46% federal bracket. And then when you throw in New York State, you're well over 50%. So if I can, in two sentences, tell a client, look, you're worth a lot of money and your children will only see half of it if you don't do anything, I think they'll forego the vacation for a few weeks or a few months.
So you've got a partner in Uncle Sam.
That's right. We all do. And if you don't do anything about it, for better or worse, we're all going to give half of our assets to the government when we die.
Now, New York also has its own estate tax?
That's right. What happened is when the tax law changed in 2000, basically the government shoved the burden off to the states. So now about half the states in the country have their own separate estate tax. New York only has $1 million of an exemption, while the IRS gives you $2 million. Compared to Florida, which in its constitution has no estate tax at all, which means that for individuals who are on the fence as to whether to become Floridians or New Yorkers, I would encourage them to go down to Florida for more than half the year. That would be beneficial tax-wise, but as long as you don't mind sweating 9 months of the year, your children will thank you.
I know somebody who went to Florida recently.
And I don't know how he did it, but he seems to like it.
So is it true then that if you're a resident of New York and you've got more than $1 million, you pay this tax and everything counts, your house too?
Yeah, everything counts. About 15 years ago or so, there used to be an exemption for the house, but that's gone. I don't see this. It's just an opinion that's changing no matter who the governor is because states need money. But once you're over $1 million, we'll all be subject to this tax. Now, the brackets are a lot lower. You're talking single digits up to 16%.
But that's on top of the federal.
That's correct. It's on top of it. The one exemption, if you want to call it that, is when you leave assets to a spouse, you get a deferral. So it's really when the second spouse dies, which is when the tax kicks in, which means, in essence, children are going to pay the tax.
So it's really not a freebie. When people say, you know, there's no tax if I leave everything to my wife, I mean, that's just, you're putting it off.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. That came about in 1986 when President Reagan was in office, and in essence, it's just a deferral. There's always a day of reckoning, and that's where planning comes in to avoid or minimize the tax.
But isn't it maybe even possible that it's worse than a deferral, that you could be worse off if you left everything to your spouse?
It's possible. Depending on the numbers, it's rare, but sometimes you might want to pay a tax up front, depending on what the assets are, and then pay some when the second spouse dies. In fact, if we have someone who's a New Yorker and then we know the surviving spouse is going to go to Florida, we might encourage different tax treatment in that case.
Now, talk to me a little bit about this exemption of $2 million and $1 million. That's called a unified credit?
That's correct. They're different. It's called a unified credit, and there are different terms you can use as to how to take advantage of that credit. I think a very quick example is if I have a $4 million estate and I leave everything to my wife, and then my wife dies, whether it's a minute later or 30 years later, my children get $4 million. We get her $2 million exemption. There's tax on $2 million. Instead, if I said in my will, take the first $2 million, hold it in trust for my wife, and give her the other $2 million, when she subsequently dies, she's not taxed on that $2 million I held in trust for her. She gets that $2 million in her pocket. She gets $2 million free, and my children get the whole $4 million tax, federal estate tax.
What kind of trust is this called?
It's either called a bypass trust, a credit shelter trust, AB trust. There are lots of terms for the same vehicle.
So basically, somebody who does it right can save close to $1 million versus somebody who doesn't do it right.
That's right. Unfortunately, you have to meet with an attorney who understands this, and you have to do something to take advantage of the exemptions. You can't just let it go by the wayside. You're really wasting an exemption. So it's well worth the money to spend meeting an attorney who understands this to save your children $1 million of estate tax.
So if you're married, you don't necessarily get this $2 million exemption. You actually have to take advantage of something.
That's right. You have to actually say something in your will to create a trust to use that exemption.
Sure sounds like a good reason to me not to get a $500 will.
That's the truth. It's spend the money, and you're saving $1 million. You're saving your children $1 million.
I'm Bernie Crooks, host of Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. We're heard right here on WFAS AM 1230 every Thursday night from 6:05 to 6:35 p.m. This week we're speaking with Michael Markoff, and we'll continue our conversation with Mike right after this short break.
Every parent worries about their kids. Unfortunately, when you have a child with disabilities, the worries are much greater.
Here's Bernie Crooks from the law firm of Littman Crooks.
Amy and Bruce had been talking about going to a lawyer to help them ever since Charlie was born. Charlie has cerebral palsy.
The experts at Littman Crooks helped Amy and Bruce set up a special needs trust to provide for Charlie's medical and financial needs for today and for the future.
The rules are very complex. You truly do need an expert to help you navigate through all the federal and state regulations to make sure that your child gets the benefits he or she is entitled to.
Do you have a child with special needs? Call the law offices of Littman Crooks.
We don't know what the future holds for Amy, Bruce, or their son Charlie, but what Amy and Bruce do know is that they've done everything in their power to ensure that Charlie has the best quality of life possible when Amy and Bruce are here and when they're not here.
Peace of mind.
Littman Crooks in White Plains, Manhattan, or online at specialneedsnewyork.com.
Welcome back. I'm Bernie Crooks speaking with Michael Markoff, and we're talking about estate planning. Now, Michael, we're not just talking about here taxes that are payable when you die, the privilege of dying, or as they call it, the death tax. But if you give away your money during your lifetime, isn't there another tax?
That's right. Government's not as ignorant as people think it is. You can't just give everything away and say you're poor when you die. You can make gifts while you're alive, but there are a few exemptions. One is you have an annual $12,000 gift tax exemption, and when you're married, it's $24,000. So every year you can cut checks to as many people as there are in the world to the tune of $24,000. The second exemption is once you go over that $24,000 for an individual, you're eating into that $2 million exemption I mentioned earlier, and that limit is $1 million. So in essence, you can make little gifts of $24,000, give one big gift of $1 million each per spouse, a total of $2 million, and then when you die, you get another $1 million each per spouse to use as an exemption. And the third, very quickly, is over and above all these gifts, there's a special exemption in which if you write checks or pay bills for education or medical expenses, as long as the checks are written directly to the institution, that's a freebie over and above these limits. And what that means is if a grandparent wants to pay for grandchild's college, as long as the check is written to Columbia and not to the grandchild and endorsed over, that's a freebie. So we can have people write checks for $24,000 plus pay $50,000 in tuition expenses.
All right, so let me make sure we got this right. If you wait till you die, you get to give away $2 million a person without federal taxes.
Correct.
But if you want to give it away during your lifetime, you're capped at $1 million.
That's right.
Except for these two exemptions where you can give $12,000 to as many people as you want.
Right.
Or you can pay for as many people's education or medical expenses.
That's right. And I think the last one is what people don't always know about and is more exciting for the grandparents. If someone has a large estate and they're already making gifts and they have enough grandchildren, between paying for camp in Westchester and college, that's a significant amount of money that they're removing from their estate.
But the key is you can't give the money to the grandchild.
Right. The level of the tax law says that the check must be written to the institution. You can't give it to the parents or the grandchild. You have to write the check to the institution.
Now, what about for clients? I'm sure you meet clients, Mike, who don't have kids. Are they allowed to do these gifting programs for nieces and nephews?
They can pay tuition bills for whomever. You know, if they want to pay for your kids and my kids, that's okay. Reality is no one does this, but that's okay.
But they're allowed to.
They're allowed to.
Now, we're talking about grandchildren, and we've got this estate planning topic. Wouldn't it be creative if somebody said, you know something, instead of leaving money to my kids and then have them be taxed again, why don't I just skip them and leave it directly to the grandchildren?
Yeah, as clever as you are, Bernie, the government unfortunately figured this out years ago, and what they figured out was they don't want to have happen what happened to the famous families in the country, the Rockefellers, Kennedys of the world, where they left everything down the line and there was no tax recovered or received when every generation died. There's now something called the generation skipping tax, which says that you can't just leave an unlimited amount down to the grandkids and remove a level of tax. That same $2 million I described before that's free from estate tax is free from the same generation skipping tax, which means in English that you can leave money from you to your kids to your grandchildren with $2 million per spouse. So eventually $4 million of your money plus the appreciation can end up with the grandkids 100 years from now.
Now, you know, we're living in a litigious society, unfortunately. And many clients, I'm sure, Mike, come to you and say, does it make sense to create a trust, or should I create a trust in a different state outside of New York? Are there better laws? Is it true that you can put your money into a trust and then not have to worry about creditors?
Well, I think the most popular estate planning technique that's been going on in our office, and I think for a number of people in the past 10 years, is this generation skipping type of trust where we leave money to children in trust for them and then to grandchildren. You don't have to go outside New York. There are some advantages to go into states like Delaware or South Dakota or Alaska, because in those states trust can last really forever in perpetuity. So if you're of the ilk that wants money to last on and on and on, thousands of years beyond your death, that's great and you can do it. But I think most our clients are more interested in making sure money gets to grandchildren, because those are the only people they're going to see during their lifetimes. And when you do that in a trust, it stands to question. It's really, it's creditor protection. If I have a husband, wife, and one child and one grandchild, and I leave everything in trust for child's lifetime when parents die, let child live off of it and go to grandchildren after child dies. If God forbid the child gets sued for malpractice or driving on 684, that inheritance is protected. And I think the biggest creditor people are worried about is are divorce creditors. What I mean by that is a spouse. They're afraid of leaving money to their son. He gets divorced. The money ends up with the daughter-in-law, and she remarries a lifeguard. They don't want the Smith family money ending up with a lifeguard.
So we've been talking about this term trust for a lot. What exactly is a trust?
A trust is really a separate structure. In a very crude way, you can call it like a corporation in the sense it's an entity. And it's something that you take assets and you put into. In other words, if I inherited $1 million and it were held in trust for me, what it means is that the money that's at a brokerage house is labeled as in trust for Michael Markoff. It means I can't get to it. It means there's someone called a trustee whose job is to invest it and usually has discretion to give me money. So it's really a vehicle to hold money on behalf of somebody else.
But can I get the money if I want it?
No, I can't. That's the whole point of the trust. If I'm creating a trust, I am entrusting someone else to hold it on behalf of a third person. So almost never can I, really never can I just walk in and take money. Someone will have to give it to me. There might be some trust where the person who created the trust will say, well, give the child the income. Let him at least get that. But if he needs more money, he's going to have to call Uncle Joe and get permission to get the rest of the money.
So you really got to trust this person, no pun intended.
That's correct. I think one of the hard parts of estate planning is coming up with names for these jobs, as I call it. Guardian, we discussed, and trustee. And really two requirements for trustee are, one, that you just mentioned, is you get along with this person. If I'm creating a trust for my wife, I want her to get along with this person. I don't want to name the evil brother-in-law and make her stuck with this person for the rest of her life. That's not fair. The other requirement is that they have some common sense how to invest, which means call your money manager, broker, et cetera, and hire them. Don't just leave the money in a checking account. Get someone who's qualified to handle the investment portion.
I'm Bernie Crooks, host of Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. We're speaking with Michael Markoff of the law firm Danziger & Markoff, based right here in White Plains. And we're going to continue right after this short message.
Unexpected medical crises can turn lives upside down. Here's Bernie Crooks from the law firm of Littman Crooks.
Barbara called. I could tell something was wrong. She was calling from the hospital. Her husband had a stroke. Harry was going to need care in a long-term facility, perhaps for the rest of his life.
Barbara couldn't find the necessary documents.
Unfortunately, this is all too common. One spouse gets sick and the other spouse has absolutely no idea where the financial records are.
Harry quickly got the care he needed. In addition to...